Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die, Another Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Silence, the sound of a band that is absolutely something. And it's about the band Silence that is absolutely something. And they're all here, pioneers, and not in that like sort of white person colonialist sort of way. Like, you're actually doing something on the podcast I've never done before. I've never interviewed a whole band at once. And perhaps for the folks in podcast land, if you could all introduce yourselves individually, your name, what you play, I don't know, favorite color too, why not?
Okay, I'm Damon, I play guitar. My guitar is red, and that is also my favorite color.
Oh. My name's Rin, I play bass, and my favorite color changes every day, but today I'd say it's red.
I am Dusty. I play the vocals, and I dislike all colors. I feel they're all equally sketch. Horrible.
So you like translucent?
Well, I was gonna say I like black, which is the absence of color, and
this is true.
So black.
I'm Justin. I play drums. My favorite color is green.
Green, that is a quality color.
Green is a good one.
It's a good color. It's a good
Did
color.
I change my answer? I'm colorblind.
Yes. Well, so gray.
Like, literally, yeah.
Gray, so it's like what tone
like,
of gray?
Well,
light
color
gray
I can
dark.
See is gray. So gray is my favorite color.
Gray is a good color. Industrial gray. That's a that's a quality gray.
Yeah.
That's why we are an industrial band. Because Rin has taken a liking to industrial gray. Because it's all...
All he can see.
All.
You are wearing a lot of gray.
I know. I'm covered in gray
so
today.
So he can see himself.
Like that.
Yes. So you guys are a band. I mean, you're really about making America great again. Is that correct? You're sort of like shut down the border, you know, till we know what's going on kind of stuff? Or, you know, what's the whole, you know, silence, joie de vivre?
Yeah, we've actually, we've donated all the proceeds from the album to the Trump campaign, even though it hasn't come out yet.
To his Taking the Future from the Children's Hands initiative.
Yes.
Which we're heavily involved in. We actually did joke about going having a Trump support rally, and it would say, you know, like...
Trump youth.
Vote Trump, and then it will just have a swastika.
But, yeah, bring back fascism and royal incest.
But we never...
Man's not wrong.
No, but we never did it. It kind of got to the point where it was still back when Trump was funny, like in the good old days.
Right,
of,
before it was actually possible that he might become president of the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the terrifying thing, is if you did that, like, people might not get the joke.
Yeah.
They might legit be like, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah, we had the idea, we were going to call it Punks for Trump, and, it was supposed to be so ridiculous that everybody would get that it was totally ridiculous, but apparently everybody doesn't get that he's totally ridiculous, so I don't know that they'd get our joke either.
Yeah, people aren't, in general, aren't getting the joke.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
The joke is no longer funny.
It's no longer funny. It's borderline terrifying.
We will not laugh about it any longer. Guys, enough.
I'm still really hoping that it's a joke. Like, he's pulling a prank on all of us.
Wouldn't that be amazing if that turned out to be the
Ashton
case?
Ashton Kutcher comes out and like, you guys got punked. Once he becomes president.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be a better situational comedian than Andy Kaufman if he could pull that off. You know what I mean? Or wouldn't it be great if, like,
he is Andy Kaufman?
That, yes.
He pulls off his mask.
Yes.
It's been me all along. Yes.
Now I might vote for him. Now that
that's, you know,
now
well,
he might
I mean,
be Andy Kaufman.
I mean, and there's that Patton Oswalt.
You heard it here first, folks. He might be Andy Kaufman.
We're breaking this. Actually, which is kind of weird, I have to say this with this qualifier, since we've gone down this Marianas Trench. Somebody I went to high school with works with Andy Kaufman's brother.
Oh, really?
And so, like, Tony Clifton showed up at their office party one year. Mm-hmm. And when there was that probably hoax that Andy Kaufman was still alive,
yeah,
he totally fell for it. He believed it.
Wait, I'm sorry, his brother believed it.
His brother believed
really?
It.
Oh, that's kind of sad, really.
That is kind of sad. And so she might listen and then feel like, these guys are jerks. No, but so I had for that call.
There's been a couple, there's been a couple kind of hoaxes, or, we don't know that they're necessarily hoaxes, but assumed hoaxes about, you know, Andy Kaufman still being alive. Still being alive, you know what I mean? Like, because there was one that, like, happened not long after he died, and then there was one that happened recently, you know, in the last couple of years or whatever, but I'm a believer that he's still alive.
In a more interesting universe, it would be a more interesting universe if he was.
I'd like to believe he's still alive.
And he's just going to show up one day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, I made the internet. You know what I mean? Because basically, let's face it, the internet...
Al Gore takes off his mask. You heard it here first. Al Gore might be Andy Kaufman.
And so, I mean, hey, we joke, but I mean, I think, you know, you guys, your music is really serious, right? I mean, you have like a serious stage presence, and you do, I mean, I make the joke about making America great again, but I think one of the things that's really compelling about the band and that I enjoy about it and is, you know, the sort of political awareness and the way that you sort of juxtapose that with, you know, so there's the sort of peace punk political awareness and the sort of goth kind of sound, which is usually, you know, it's like two things that are famous for their nihilism, and you try to, like, redeem them and make them into something kind of proactive, which is cool.
Yeah, we're not necessarily nihilistic, but when I woke up this morning, I had a terrible hangover, and I was feeling very nihilistic about the world. Now that I'm drinking a beer again, I'm very optimistic, and that nihilism is behind me.
No, but in all serious, though, I mean, when Dusty and I first started talking about the band, like, the politics of it was actually what we were talking about before the music really. Yeah. That was... It was really important to us that be sort of front and center and really crucial to what the band was about. So I'm glad that's coming through.
Yeah, we actually started as more of a, like what I commented on your Napalm Death sticker from your high school locker earlier. We actually started kind of more, our idea was more of a crusty kind of, you know, doom, like early Napalm Death type of thing, and that's what we first started writing, and then
we made one song like that.
Yeah, and then we were kind of digging it or whatever, but we were on a couple days later, we were walking the dogs out in the woods behind, at the time I lived behind them, and there's in Frick Park there, we're walking the dogs, and it just came up, we were like, do you like Bauhaus, man? And he's like, yeah, you know, do you like Joy Division? And then we're Killing Joke back and forth, and then we kind of just, I think there, in the woods, we kind of just decided let's do that instead, you know. So then we started writing the songs more in the style that you mentioned, a little more of a Bauhaus influence style. Which when we first started, Bauhaus was definitely the main inspiration. I mean, we've kind of branched out a little since then, but I think it's safe to say our first three or four songs, that aside from the crust stuff, were you know, definitely Bauhaus inspired.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were jamming on that Bauhaus cover at our very first practice. That was actually the first thing that kind of gelled for us.
Yeah,
was playing in the flat field.
In the flat field, yeah. So that's where we kind of came up with the idea to mix kind of the anarchist ideas of, say, bands like Crass or the Poison Girls, mm-hmm. or even just our own ideas that maybe a band in the past had yet to speak about or hadn't spoke about or whatever, with the Bauhaus sound, and that's kind of how it came to be.
Yeah, and I mean, Friday night, you know, I got the pleasure of watching your set at Kativo, and like just on that big PA system, it just all sounded so good. You know, the guitar tone and the rhythm section just so locked in, and the vocal on top of it. It was just, it's really like, ooh, that's kind of nice. You know?
Right on. We can't tell up there.
You can't
tell. The mix we get in the monitors is not at all like
well,
what's
we
out there,
also, but we couldn't see if you were there because all you can see is the bright lights.
Yeah.
So we got off stage and I say to, we're in the backstage, I said to Justin, I was like, did we play to 10 people or like 200? I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Because literally all you can see is the bright white
Yeah,
of the lights.
It was weird because I was like in the front. Of course, I'm wearing all black, so you wouldn't have seen me. But we kept like, we started like inching forward. We realized like, this is absurd. Like, we are like 20 feet from the stage and there's nobody in front of us.
Yeah.
We could stand right there. And so
yeah, I can see the checkered floor in front and that's it.
That was the boundary line. It was kind of a weird, you know, for a band that sometimes I think in your lyrics question, you know, kind of stable beliefs or unquestioned beliefs, you know, the behavior of crowds and the masses that it just happened. You question it and you got totally screwed by it. in the same performance. Which brings me to, I think, though, my favorite lyric, I think, of, because I was, you know, you guys did the advanced calculus, and I downloaded that and was driving around this week listening to it, and the Rolling Stones are still alive while millions in Ethiopia have died.
That's Dusty.
Yeah. I was wondering if it was going to be a Damon. I was like, oh, let it be me. Damon has some great lines also. Actually, when you said it that way, it made me feel sad. I was like, man, I write some sad stuff.
Well, all our songs are pretty sad.
Yeah. But that line in particular, even though one of the Rolling Stones drowned.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Brian.
It wasn't Brian, I believe.
Brian
Johnson?
Brian Jones.
Brian Jones. Brian Jones. Brian Jones drowned. So it's only partially true. One of the Rolling Stones is dead. But, you know, Keith, Mick, and the gang are still alive. And we also like to add, we wish no will ill upon the Rolling Stones.
Ill will.
What did I say?
Will ill.
Will ill. Ill will.
Will Smith. Ill Will Smith.
Yeah. No, but where does that, what does that line mean, Dusty?
Well, it talks about how... the Rolling Stones, you know, live in the lap of luxury, you know, in their million-dollar homes and stuff, while people in Ethiopia starve to death. And just in general, how we overfeed farm animals in the U.S. while people starve in places like Ethiopia, you know, we overfeed the Rolling Stones. Imagine, I mean, for real, you know,
if you took the money from like one ticket to go see the Rolling Stones and you gave that to somebody that needed it.
Yeah, and definitely in the Global South that money would go a lot farther. You think even you know, you could buy a piece of tile from the pool where Brian Jones died.
Oh, really?
Of the Rolling Stones, yeah. I mean, you talk about, it's the Rolling Stones bug the crap out of me. And so it's nice to hear a band, you know, take on the Rolling Stones in that way. And that it's so fucking unfair that Mick Jagger got to be Mick Jagger. Like, he got to live as Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Right, yeah.
That sucks. You know? Studio 54, hanging out with Bowie, all of that shit. Like, he got all of that. For what? That's so unfair. And it's so, like, I think our, you know, it's also for me, you know, this, like, mainstream rock and roll or classic rock is, like, the new conservatism. It's the new, it's so dead and so sad. And
it's, I mean, especially now with the stations, it used to be the stations playlist they would play, you know, well, let's go back to the Rolling Stones again, they would play 20 Rolling Stones songs, you know, and they had them in rotation. Where now it's skimmed down to three. So basically, classic rock radio is the same Rolling Stones and AC/DC and Pink Floyd songs again and again and again. You know, it's basically just exists to sell used cars and Burger King during the commercials. It's just fodder in between the McDonald's commercials or whatever. So that's kind of why we took on a band like the Rolling Stones. We could have picked a band that we like much less, like Genesis. You guys, I mean, I don't know if you guys like Genesis, but I don't like Genesis.
No, me neither. I mean, like
Peter Gabriel era.
Moments.
It's
there.
Not as bad, but...
No, I mean, there are some really good Rolling Stones cuts. It's not specifically meant to be a slap against their music, per se, but... But there is something about them now where, you know, I don't know, I saw this TV commercial for their tour last year or whatever, and, you know, they're just, like, doing the most lackluster version of Satisfaction for, like, this, like, throng of cheering 60-year-olds. And you know, standing stock still, like, you know, their skin looks like leather, and, you know, and it's just, like, I don't know. I read a review, I can't remember where it was, that was called Mild Horses of their new tour. I mean, it was just, and it's just like, come on, guys, really. I mean, we should put that lyric in context, right? That whole song has sort of a Cold War feel. There's references to JFK and things like that in there, too. So it's sort of historically contextual as well, but I just lost the thread. Whatever. We don't hate the Rolling Stones, per se.
Or JFK.
It's just more sort of about celebrity, right?
Yeah, a lot of it is about celebrity. Because the JFK line, like, now I'm not gonna be able to remember it. JFK line is
Matthew's got it. I changed and I flipped.
There's a lot of words in the next song.
River Styx.
I like the way that you say it. Anyway.
Mother Mary, full of grace, studied every line on John F. Kennedy's face in the discotheque of disconnect. Good Catholic boys come to repent.
Yeah, that's the line there. I wanted to put John F. Kennedy in a song was just because looking through old Life magazines with Jimmy Rose and I were one day that he had found somewhere from around the time that JFK died, and there's this picture of I think it's his son. Salute, you know, it's kind of famous
saluting
picture.
At the end.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, what a heartbreaking photo that is, you know, and that's, we just kind of were talking about how, you know, how gothic the photo was, you know, so that's why I was like, that's how it comes up, and that's in the scheme of the song, I thought JFK fit well with, you know, with Mick Jagger and, you know, whatever else is in the song, a lot of, like, Cold War references.
Yeah. One Last Summer, One Final Midnight.
Yeah.
This is such a great line, too.
Thanks.
Yeah. And, you know, too, I dislike the Rolling Stones. I will go on the record as saying, it's just not fair.
All not songs. Fair. You just
you not even play with fire? Nothing?
I mean, there's a couple song that I could, like, okay. But it's, again, it's like, they're okay.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones, they're okay.
A Beatles fan, then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. It's okay to disagree about music.
I just don't care.
I'm obsessed
about
with Frank Sinatra. Dusty can't stand him. So,
yeah.
You know.
I'm going to change the words to Frank Sinatra still alive.
Well, I think, though,
there's one problem with that.
All right, Nancy, then. Actually, you know what's weird? I don't like Frank at all. Huge Nancy Sinatra fan. I love the stuff with Lee Hazelwood.
That stuff's creepy. I mean, it's cool, but it's super creepy.
That's off there. Summer Wine, you know, by Nancy Sinatra is very, very gothic.
Well, I think, though, there is something to be said, though. I mean, I think that those aesthetic choices can be really political and interesting. And I think that's the other thing is, if I'm going to keep my, you know, Rolling Stones hate going and carry us through the rest of this interview, it's also this way that I think sometimes pop culture can be really fulfilling and interesting and pleasurable. But it could also be kind of weirdly dehumanizing.
Profoundly alienating.
Yes, which is Beast in a Box. See our transition right there to another song? Huh?
Well played.
Thank you.
So smooth.
You picked another one of Dusty's songs, though, so you're going to have to ask him about
that. Eventually, I'm sure we'll get to a Damon song. But Beast in a Box is the parts about, you mentioned alienation, is about the alienation that we feel as humans, you know, and how it relates to the alienation that of farmed animals in the U.S., you know, the pain that and the loneliness that we feel as humans in and how it relates to animals that that we eat or whatever. and it also took to go back to Once Upon a Time, the Rolling Stones song, not to keep... Not, Beast in a Box has nothing to do with the Rolling Stones, so I think we're past that. But
or Alice in Chains.
Or Alice in Chains. Yes. And it does have a little bit to do with Alice in Chains. Yeah. I'm drawing a blank on what
Alienation, farm animals, alienation as humans.
Right, back to, I'd mentioned, people starving in developing countries while we overfeed farm animals to eat, you know, that, so it, Beast in a Box has to do with that too. So those two songs are kind of linked in that way.
Yeah.
And in general, starvation is kind of a theme that comes up several times on the record. It's something that we would like to see end. And I think the way, one of the main ways that we can, work to end global starvation is to, switch to, a plant-based diet.
Because I think, what is it, a beef cow, I think, has to eat 25 pounds of grain a day or something like that, which is...
absurd.
Insane. And I think that 25 pounds of grain, I think you... that's a couple thousand gallons of water or several thousands of gallons of water to create that grain.
Yeah. I mean, Justin eats 25 pounds of grain a day, too.
Well, I mean, you're the drummer. You're the one in the band that's got to work the arms and the feet and, you know, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, you're the one who has to be in shape in the band. Everybody else can get fat, right? But for this band to work...
Yeah, I have to have all the grain in my arms.
Yeah.
Got the carbs, burning those.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make light of a very serious issue. I kind of did, but it is a very serious issue. Also, Justin eats a ton of food.
Yeah. We all do eat. We do eat a ton of grain. That's true. I love grain. What can I say?
Grain's good. Grain, enjoy that metabolism while you're young, folks. Let me tell you, it goes downhill, and then
if you're saying while you're young, you better stop looking at me and Dusty.
Yeah, he's looking at Rin.
Yeah.
While you're young,
I love pizza.
Pizza's quality, man. But and I think too. Yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of this political, I mean, you guys. So you have a record coming out this year on profane existence,
that's correct.
Yeah,
and I know, Damon, you said like this has been like this is like almost like a dream come true.
You got
drafted by the sports team you grew up.
I can't think of a label I'd be happier to work with than Profane Existence. I mean, the fact that they want to put out our record is just really really exciting.
Yeah,
and just a tremendous honor because I mean, you know, I grew up listening to their records and reading the zine back when that was still a thing, which fortunately sounds like it's about to be again. You know, there's been some sort of, I won't go into it, but there's been some sort of changes in the management, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that label is sort of resetting its compass right now. And I'm really, really excited that we get to be part of that. So
that's awesome. But yeah, so actually maybe one thing we could do is we take a little break. So we do have, actually maybe we could talk, we can play the song. I'll play the song in the podcast.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the song.
Okay,
that sounds great.
Which one are you thinking? Is it one, I'm assuming one of our songs.
Yeah.
Bring up the flames.
So, yeah, that was War Drums. And Damon, that's finally, it's one of your songs. You can talk about that. As he drinks, actually, I would.
I'm trying to get my 25 pounds of grain in. So.
Hey, beer's a good way to
do it.
When
we said 25 pounds of grain, we're talking just beer. I'm like, yes, the food we eat.
Yeah,
War Drums. War Drums. So if you could kind of talk us through that record or that song, I could talk about what I think about it, but
sure.
Why not the guy who wrote it?
War Drums was the first song that I wrote after moving to Pittsburgh. And I think I'd met Dusty, but we hadn't actually gotten together to do anything yet. And I was sitting around, I was unemployed at the time because I had just moved here, and I was sitting around watching CNN, and you know, there was all this sort of saber rattling going on about Syria and what was going on in Syria. And, you know, person after person from the U.S. government kept coming on the television and talking about why it was that we needed to bomb Syria. And it all sounded an awful lot like what we had heard about why we needed to go into Iraq under George W. Bush. Which, of course, sounded an awful lot like why we needed to go into Iraq the first time. And I was just sort of sitting around thinking about how every time we go into an international conflict, the rationale sounds very, very similar, right? We're going to free these people. We're going to liberate them. We're going to bring democracy to their land. And what actually ends up happening most of the time is that innocent people get killed, their homes are burned to the ground, people in those countries are even angrier at the United States than they were before. Democracy still doesn't show up, or if it does, it's a, you know, very sort of polluted, manipulated version of democracy that doesn't even last very long. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's very, very difficult to sort of see any benefit to the tremendous loss of life and resources and you know, everything else, environmental devastation that results from international wars. So that was what I wrote War Drums about, and that was actually the first silent song, although it sounded much, much different. Yes.
And I think, too, I mean, and I like the way it ends about the, you know, oh, and 10 years later, we'll realize, which I think for me, you know, one of the things I think we don't talk about in this country is that any working person, basically, or any young person, I think about my students, will spend their entire working lives paying for the Iraq War. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of things that might make Americans' lives better, we, you know, it's the war we fought on credit. And yeah, 10 years later, oops, well, I guess, you know, Michael Moore was right.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you're pretty hard-pressed to find anybody outside of Fox News that will defend the decisions of George W. Bush to get involved in Iraq. I mean, almost everybody today realizes that that was completely the wrong decision. And you brought up the financial cost, but that doesn't even begin to look into how much it destabilized the whole region. I mean, the whole ISIS situation can be, you know, we can draw a line back to the Iraq War that is a pretty straight, direct line. You know, we're still paying paying the cost of that, both financially and in terms of, you know, loss of life. And the cost that we're paying here in the United States are minimal compared to the people that actually live in that region, right? And that's the line about the victims are always the hungry and poor. You know, it's very easy for us in the U.S. to say, oh, you know, let's go, you know, carpet bomb whoever, because we aren't the ones who are seeing our homes burned to the ground, our children killed, and our livelihoods destroyed for what amounts to, you know, political gamesmanship.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's so insane because, too, speaking of things that, like, maybe we don't talk about or we can't talk about, you know, we have a war and we don't even, you know, the idea of, you know, how many people died in it, civilians, even our own people. You know, that's not even, like, that doesn't even seem like that's common knowledge.
Yeah.
No, I mean, well, that's so insane if you think about it.
I think there's an active effort to cover that up, frankly. And I don't mean to be conspiratorial here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to suggest that, you know, this is the Illuminati or something like that. But I mean, I think civilian casualties are kept out of the news for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, when you start to see that, people start to not feel so good about that war. We saw it happen in a big way in Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
And the United States government was very clear after Vietnam about the need to keep journalists away from those topics if people were to continue to support war efforts. Mm-hmm. And so we get this sort of sanitized version of wars now where it's like, oh, it's smart bombs, you know, they only kill the terrorists.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's just blatantly untrue.
Then yeah. you look at footage and pictures of like all these just bombed out cities and people wonder where all the refugees come from. And, yeah. and it's like, you know, I see photos like that and then I look out my window and I see like Lawrenceville. You know, and I'm like that. I mean,
the disconnect is huge.
Like, how are people so disconnected from that? Like, how they're human beings, and look at these modern cities they have that are gone now. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, and I mean, I think people just have no idea. I mean, the majority of victims of drone strikes are not the intended targets, yeah. right? The majority, from you know, some estimates as high as 90%, the victims of drone strikes are. Not the intended targets of those mm-hmm. strikes.
I just don't understand how people can believe like everything that they're told. I mean, when information is so readily available online, it's like right in your face constantly, and yet it's just people just ignore it.
I think to go back to the disconnect, part of it is that the reporting is you know, it's Geraldo Rivera or someone who gives their side of the story. The side of, you know, Fox News, whoever. It's not like we were talking about Vietnam. It's not like seeing the Vietnam journalist who had the pictures that, you know, outraged a nation. Yeah. You know, instead of that, you have, again, you know,
Geraldo's a great example, too, because, I mean, he got busted for lying.
Yeah.
About his war coverage, and yet he still has a job.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the university and the biggest maybe public consequence he's faced, the university I'm employed by, canceled a speaking appearance by him because of a semi-nude selfie that he took.
Was that lightning?
That was lightning.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so the power will definitely go out, and we will lose the whole thing. There's the thunder. That is totally going to happen. I should have saved the project when I paused for the song, but you know, we'll just.
We'll come back if we get struck by lightning.
Yes.
I mean, by that, I mean, we'll come back in another life.
We'll come back to haunt you.
Is this like this could be considered a lightning rod, maybe. I don't know.
It's good. There's a lot of, we're standing around a metal pole. And we are in a lightning storm.
The listeners can't see us, but we are on the roof. We are.
This actually isn't my first lightning storm podcast. I did one in a cemetery.
Oh, really?
Last summer, and there was lightning, and we were under a tree, which so it was okay, so we didn't get rained on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Really tall tree. Like, the tallest tree in at least 5 miles, I think. Yeah,
that's a good call.
That was smart.
Why aren't we in the cemetery right now?
Do you want to get up and go to the cemetery now?
We could sit in the tree.
Yeah.
We
could sit in the tree.
We're climb a tree in the cemetery.
There's actually a cave
storm?
In the Allegheny Cemetery.
There is.
Yeah, we're going to show that.
It would be perfect.
Let's go. Let's go right now.
Right now, in the dark, in the night.
This is Geraldo Rivera reporting live from a cave during a thunderstorm. In Iraq.
Because I'm a hero. Of course. But, actually, you know what? So, since we do have two songs, and I really should save the project, maybe we should listen to Swimming with Boys?
Yeah, and we'll come back to you in the cemetery.
Yes.
Sounds will be back after this.
After we rob these graves. Because we're gone. All right, this next one here is off an EP we got coming out in the springtime. This one's the B-side to that, and this one's called Swimming with Boys. Forces gearing up for a
Start right now. All right. So that was Swimming with Boys, which is about...
That's me again.
That's Dusty again.
Swimming with Boys is just kind of about going with the flow of, I guess, maleness. You know, the violence that, you know, that comes along with being a male. The machismo or whatever.
Traditional conceptions of masculinity.
Traditional, yeah. And it's also about... A lot of it is about when, because there's a line in it that's like, I always liked swimming with boys, and swimming with boys, just like I said, kind of means going with the flow of this and being. But when I was young, I really did like a lot of that, like fighting, you know, with other boys, and it was in a way kind of like bonding, even though you were all hurting each other or whatever. We had a gang that was called the Headbangers when I was in middle school, and we were the second toughest gang, and the first toughest gang was called the Metalheads, who were similar. So they would beat us up, and then we would, you know, bully other kids because we got, you know, bullied by them or by our dads at home.
So you pick on like the New Waivers? Was there a gang called the New Waivers?
No, it was just people who were. It was even. I mean, when I was in middle school, so many people liked heavy metal that, you know, we heavy metal people would beat up other heavy metal people, you know, it was kind of all part of the thing. So it's kind of, this song is kind of about that, about how when, you know, the cycle of violence that you kind of get caught in when you get caught up in the traditional ideas of being a male. Yeah. You know, like you might have problems at home with your dad, and then you take that out on some kid and who takes it out on another boy who, and that's just swimming with boys. It's just the flow of those things, the way those things the way those things go. So it's kind of, it's an interesting song for me because it's kind of a more of a personal song than a lot of the other ones are, and it's not really, it's kind of just making an observation about that whole cycle rather than stating an opinion about it one way or the other, because it. Like I said, it's, you know, I was involved in those type of things or whatever.
And still in favor, you know, of
them. It's still do. We're basically a gang now. No, this was when I was in, you know, seventh grade or whatever. But, you know.
I think it's hard, too. And I think there's not a lot of really great models of masculinity to follow. Like, there's more, I think, you being a young... I'm so glad I'm not young anymore, but if I was, that would really suck, because, like, basically, what are your models? Like, Kenny Chesney and, and Donald Trump. Basically, like, that's what you get.
Yeah.
Like, you get, like, dude bros or...
Rednecks and dude bros.
Rednecks and dude bros.
That's my entire childhood.
And I don't mean to be like, woe is us, we're all white males, right? Yeah. Obviously, we have it a lot easier than most people.
Yeah.
But it sucks, too, to be a young white male if you're not into that stupid shit of, like, you know, strutting around like a rooster and fucking wanting to beat people up and just have sex with as many girls as you can. Like, if that's not your thing, you also are a victim, right? Not in any way to compare that to what, you know, what lots of other people experience, which is much, much worse, right? But it still merits reflection all the same.
Which, again, is, I think, goes back to, again, one of the things that I really like about your band is I think that you're willing to sort of explore these things and kind of turn, you know, and kind of make, you know, these interesting aesthetic sort of juxtapositions, you know, the punk, the goth thing, the, you know, positivity versus, you know, it could just be about death. You know, kind of thing. It's
there's
so much more
in our songs.
I think so. Well, I think it's dark, but it gives me energy anyway. It gives me. I feel energized.
One voice
by
in
listening.
The night is enough. Or...
Oh,
yeah. There is some glimmers of hope that I feel like shine through in the songs. I mean, the overall vibe is kind of a sad
dark.
One, a dark one, but. But yeah, songs like, which, you know, we might get around to talking about later, The Deafening Sound of Absolutely Nothing, Part 1, we talk about, at the end it says, one voice in the night is enough to drown out the deafening sounds of absolutely nothing, which I think is a very hopeful...
Yeah, absolutely.
...statement, you know, which kind of comes also near the end of the record, which kind of...
Yeah, but then we followed up with the, like, most dark,
hopeless
song, which is where we end, but, whatever.
Well, I mean, it's like life.
You just flip the record over again,
Yeah. Like life, there's, you know, there's bleakness.
If we didn't think there was some kind of hope, we wouldn't bother, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the reason that we write and sing songs about all this is because we're hoping that in some small way we're contributing to things being different than they are.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if I didn't think that was possible, I don't know what I would do, but it wouldn't be this.
When somebody reaches out to me or, you know, one of us, and they see us at a live show and they actually listen to the lyrics and they come up to me and comment about it, tell me, like, what they liked or, like, how they related to a certain song, that's what really... like, makes me feel good. I think that's the positivity, is, like, there's other people out there that feel the same way we do, which is what is hopeful about it, in my opinion, as Damon said. And, so, like, when people come up to me and say, like, oh, I really like this lyric, or really related to that song, or, you know, or just simply thank us for, you know, playing and singing about what we sing about, that's where I get the positivity out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's there. You just got to look for it.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, I come from, I think, or at least I was kind of initiated into, like, this aesthetic tradition where, you know, the purpose of all art, music, whatever, is to celebrate all aspects of the human experience.
Yeah.
Even those things that are painful or uncomfortable to talk about or that you just can't talk about. I mean... you know, it's going to be time for the bottom five soon, but, you know, even something like Not a Hero about, you know, just even questioning the idea of, you know, the kind of people we do celebrate or the kind of people we stop questioning is, I think that's really important. And on that happy note, I think it's time for the bottom five.
All right.
And so the rule for this, as a band, as a collective unit, as a collective unit, Silence has to come up with one answer. No four individual answers. There has to be a Silence answer to the bottom five questions.
A Silent answer?
A Silence
answer. Because that's easy.
So we all look at each other.
Just look at each other.
I've already said
dead air.
Yeah.
Dead air. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah. Let's
all
do
speak
it
in unison.
Yes. All right. Question one. It's the stock question. Everybody gets it the first time on. All right. If reincarnation is real, and the band had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, the sort of single cell, like, you know, whatever controls the universe.
Yeah, we're all one cell.
You're all one single cell now. You're such a cohesive unit. And yet, you know, I guess apparently the metaphysics of the universe hates peace punk or whatever. And so you have to start back at, like, amoeba or whatever. What infectious disease or illness would you be?
Can I make an argument for Mad Cow?
Yeah.
I'll tell you why.
Okay, go
one,
ahead.
Okay, it's made out of prions, right? And I'm not a doctor, I don't really know what that means.
Damn it, Jim, I'm not a doctor.
But you can't kill it, right? Like, it can go through a digestive system, you can't kill it, you can get it super hot, you can't kill it, right? So we're almost immortal. If we're that, the other thing is...
Well, then we're stuck in
disease. Who gets that?
People who eat cows, yeah. That's I think it's I like that, one. But I'm gonna go with the Rolling Stones.
Well, that's not a single celled organism.
Oh, they have many cells.
Yeah, they have many cells. Yes, but they are disease.
That. Yeah, that's
so. I think I'll put that back on the table. So okay, we got Mad Cow prions and the Rolling Stones. So what are we
fake disease?
I'm not budging from mine. So we'll be here all night.
You know, one of my favorite diseases. This obviously probably won't be selected, but I want to put it on the table. If Ian's have ever heard of the Descalada, is that how it's pronounced?
Not
from the Ender's Game series.
No.
And
wait, does it have to be real? Does it have to be a real disease?
No.
And well, this disease.
Then I want to change my answer, but sorry, go ahead.
Okay, this disease is really fascinating because it, like, humans came to this one planet and were starting to colonize it, but they all started dying off of this mysterious disease that was literally ripping apart their cells and stuff, and they were, like, falling to pieces. But there were these native creatures on the planet. They lived in the forest and all that. What you find out, spoiler alert, through the books, is that the disease...
Wait, is this the Hunger Games?
No. Ender's Game. It's not Ender's Game, it's like a sequel book to it.
Ender's Hunger Games.
I think it's Speaker of the Dead. Basically, what you find out is that when these native creatures die, they don't actually die, they move on to the next stage of life, which they become a tree.
Oh, that's cool.
And then, like, eventually they become something else, and it's like this cycle. But the Descalada, this disease, is what made them, like... Because there's only, like... There's, like, one natural creature, like, organic creature, or, like, you know, like, mammal-type creature on the planet. There's, like one form of grass, one form of tree, like, and there's, like... So they figure out over time, like, this is why... Because this is one disease that...
Oh, but it destroys biodiversity.
Yeah.
I can't be that. If we're going to include fictional diseases, I want to change my vote to the Wandering Sickness. If you've ever seen Things to Come, silent science fiction film, there's this, like, horrific war, and then humanity is, like, on the verge of collapse, and then suddenly this plague sets in that is the Wandering Sickness, and you get this, and then you, like... At some point, you, like, get up out of your bed, and you're just this weird, like, dead-eyed, wandering wraith. And, of course, that causes it to infect other people. I saw, like, the last two-thirds of this movie, not knowing what it was, like, late at night on public access cable in 1996, and it's never gone away. But if we're going to stick to real diseases, I'm going to stick with Mad Cow.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Mad Cow.
Change your mind, too. To Donald Trump. Justin, what are you thinking?
I can get down with that, too. Donald Trump. Worst disease.
But not single cellular.
How many cells does a dude have?
Probably like five billion or something. Billion. I don't really know. But
there you go.
Mad Cow.
I'm
a Mad Cow.
Yeah, I'll go Mad Cow.
All right, I'll go Mad Cow.
Okay.
But I want to about reincarnation. You mentioned the Beatles. There's a good, you know, George Harrison. You know, mm-hmm. obviously a
multicellular.
Oh, him too. Never mind.
No.
George Harrison, obviously, you know, a big, if you know, as a Beatles fan, you know, yeah. obviously a very big believer in reincarnation. And John Lennon at one time, you know, followed similar beliefs to George, though he changed his beliefs later on in life or whatever. But when asked about that, there was about whether or not John Lennon still believed in reincarnation, they asked George, and John Lennon, who was dead at the time, you know,
didn't answer.
George said, "Well, he definitely does believe in it now that he's dead, you know, because he's came back as something." So to bring back the Beatles,
there we go.
I don't have any stories that involve the Rolling Stones and reincarnation.
That's probably for the best.
But I just want to say, Paul is dead.
Yeah.
No, if I could, just for a second, before we move on to the next question, I just want to say the fact that I actually wanted to talk about this, and we didn't get to it because we had so much else to talk about, but I think the fact that me and Dusty are really into the Beatles is actually really important to this band, because we've actually had, like, long conversations about the importance of the Beatles in our songwriting, and I think that's part of why we have a lot more emphasis on melodies than a lot of other sort of bands in the punk genre, is because we're both big Beatles fans.
I love the Beatles,
so too. I make jokes about it. Oh yeah, Ren's a big Beatles fan as well.
It's like I make
jokes about, you know, John Lennon or whatever, but actually the Beatles, tremendously important to my sort of musical evolution. So
awesome.
Paul is dead.
All right, question two. If you had to choose, would you welcome the total elimination of day or night?
Day.
Well,
I fucking hate the
sun. I mean, I hate the sun, but, you know, I like plants and, you know?
Yeah, but you think about all the jobs it would create. Like, because we would have to still eat, we would still need plant life, we would still need light.
No solar power.
Yeah, well, no solar power, but without the sun, probably global warming, not an issue. Right?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Good point. And think of all the jobs in the lighting manufacturing sector.
No, I think you're actually convincing me to go the other way now, though.
What's that?
Well, not because of jobs, per se.
He hates jobs.
People do jobs. But the notion that this is going to require tremendously more manufacturing and a lot more energy.
It's not environmentally
sustainable.
We can already sleep all the time, though.
Here's
late night eat.
Let me quote Donna Summer here with, I love the nightlife, I like to boogie. So that is kind of why I'm going to maybe do away with the sun.
Are
we bombing the sun in this theoretical?
Yeah,
What was the question?
It's just like a matrix.
The total, if you had to choose, to say
black hole.
Total elimination, day or night. So
slingshot the sun into a black hole.
Sun shot into a black hole. Or what if the world just stopped spinning and you had to choose which hemisphere? We could do that too.
Oh, okay.
There's not set rules to this.
So
question.
We could just get all the solar power from the other side.
Yeah.
Just
run an extension cord.
Yeah, extension cords.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm gonna go eliminate the daytime. I mean, I sleep most of the day and it's dark when I wake up anyway, so I've already done that. The answer is I've already eliminated the sun from my life.
I work in a windowless factory during the day and then leave at night. So
yeah,
it's like I don't know.
From a purely aesthetic perspective, I'm gonna just go with this because nighttime is just more interesting aesthetically, I think.
And we have a song called Nighttime Girls.
We do. So
that would kind of make that song, because, like,
what is that about? I don't even know.
Yeah, let's
what you're
say 30
about.
Years in the future,
it's
you know.
Blown up the sun.
We're playing, this one's called Nighttime Girls, and it's only daytime for the last 30 years. Kids are going to be like, what the fuck is nighttime, you know? So it's going to make one of our songs totally irrelevant.
We can't have that.
We can't have that. So,
all right, nighttime. We're going with nighttime.
It'll hurt re-release sales. So.
Yeah, it will. Yeah.
All
right, question three. This is a good question, I think, for a peace punk band. It's the Christopher Hitchens question. Of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you like to write? Or, I will accept, write concept album obituary.
I'm going to go, I've already thought about this before many times, so I'm going to go with Idi Amin.
Big, solid.
Big, I almost said big, I'm not a big fan, but you know, like to read, his, read big fan of Idi Amin. No, I'm, you know, like to read about
but
him.
We have stuff. To all agree, right?
What, do you not like him?
Well, no, I don't, but that's the whole point, right? But yeah. but
he's more of a Chairman Mao guy. I'm an Idi Amin guy.
No,
we clash a bit.
I'm gonna say, so people we're talking about people who are alive now.
Alive now.
Oh, wait, okay, I didn't realize. So let me take that back, because he's already dead.
Yeah, I think he's gone. Yeah.
I think a crocodile ate
him. Yeah.
The I'm pretty sure he was feeding a crocodile, and...
How do we feel about Donald Trump?
What about Mick Jagger?
What about Ben Roethlisberger? Someone's paid way too much and has way too much celebrity.
You know, yeah, I feel like as like punk rockers who lived through the early 2000s, we're kind of obligated to go with George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Wait, Reagan's dead. Never mind.
Yeah, so, Reagan's gone.
And so. Thatcher's dead too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with Mick Jagger.
you consider him one of the
like
great
George
villains?
George W. Bush. That's a good one. That's a good one.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but we also talked earlier about how we actually like the Rolling Stones.
Well, he changed my mind.
Hey. Well, we have to consent here. I just made a verb.
How about the Zodiac Killer, Ted Cruz?
He's a good one. Well. But will he win?
You know, I'm going to say the greatest living villain is Andy Kaufman. So I'm going to go with Andy Kaufman.
He stole our hearts.
Yeah, if Andy Kaufman dies, we'll write his obituary.
Yeah.
Mm. Can we go with one of the Koch brothers, maybe?
Mm.
The who?
Guess not.
The Koch brothers.
What kind the, of Koch? The billionaires who the billionaires who funded the Tea Party.
Oh, the... K-O.
C-H.
Yeah, not Coca-Cola.
Yeah, no.
I was like, I'm going to say Coca-Cola.
Does it have to be corporations or people, right?
Yeah,
corporate. Oh, yeah.
That, you found a loophole.
Nice.
Yeah.
That no one has thought of in this question before.
So, yeah, how about Nike?
Nike, yeah.
Nike?
Is that the...
They're the same thing, right? Same company.
Yeah. Trying to think of the worst
Uber,
the worst corporation. Yeah, but I don't know.
Nike's got to be up there. Monsanto's a good choice.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're bad.
Yeah.
We'll just go with we can go with Nike if that.
Sure. Is that a good compromise? Can we all go with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nike? Wait, nice. Reebok. We changed.
All right, question four. If you could unmake any invention, what would it be? If there is one technology you could take out of the world and it, like, we would never know that it was... We would even not even notice its lack or its absence.
Selfie sticks?
That's a good one.
I mean, one particular technology... I would probably say the... You know, I'd have to say the atomic bomb.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
In all seriousness. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we could say something else so we could laugh and joke for a while. That was kind of somber.
Yeah, that was. Now, let's I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to rewrite some lyrics.
Yeah. Same with if we eliminated
the
nighttime, yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah, we'd have
for
to,
the betterment
we can take one for the team here.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to
Yeah, I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nuclear war is bad.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Yeah.
Thumbs down. Unanimous dislike.
All right. Are we ready? We're almost through the woods here. Last question. Question five. Say this podcast didn't go well. Say this podcast went really bad and you were to murder me right now. How would you dispose of my body? Like, what would you do? What would be the mechanism for you trying not to get caught?
We could
A plastic
cut
barrel.
Them up and turn them into a book. Put them on a bookshelf.
Put them
on
a bookshelf.
Yeah, there's a lot of books around here. Yeah.
It's too much DNA evidence, though.
Yeah, because then his flesh is like bound in.
Yeah, there's tons of woods. I grew up in woods where just barrels and barrels just sitting in the forest.
Is there a lot of blood in the room, or have we poisoned you?
Oh, maybe strangulation.
Okay, so
I mean, there might be. I might pee myself. I don't know. I did have some beer, so
okay. But we haven't splashed things around too much.
Yeah, no, not too splashy. Let's go, not too splashy.
Well, we'd invite you to an after party and give you some.
He's already dead.
Oh, you're already dead.
This is a weekend.
Hey, come on over.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to take you to some parties.
Here is our answer.
Weekend at Bernie's. He's not dead. We'll just pretend yes. like he's alive.
Yeah. That's
it. Indefinitely. Yeah. It'll be a weekend at Bernie's.
We would continue doing the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, we just...
I would just do your voice.
Teach some classes.
We'll prop you up in front of, like, keyboards, too. And, like, you'll be part of the band.
Oh, I could be the fifth silent.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just record some, like, you know, some keyboard loops.
Yeah.
Program them into a loop pedal or something. And
as you start
like,
to
we
decay,
like the we'll podcast just... so much, he joined the band.
Yeah.
He wears zombie makeup now.
We'll just eventually hint at, like, a drum.
He's gone.
And, you know.
That's how goth he is. He looks dead.
Yeah.
Completely unresponsive on stage. He's totally
depressed.
He has
no heartbeat.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's cold.
I think that's the answer. Yep.
It's a
sort of Weekend at Bernie's turned goth scenario.
And I think, because I mean...
Weekend at Dusty's.
Weekend at Belvies.
Weekend at Belvies.
You've been pretty nice and fair to us throughout the course of this, so I mean, we wouldn't... You know, it's
well. Obviously, we're not going to murder you.
I was going to say we wouldn't chop them up, but I didn't. Wasn't going to say that. You know what I mean? It's not. We don't want to be like, oh, we're going to cut your head off and put it
in
a barrel.
Records.
Like this.
That's the thing.
Fuck.
You could press them into records. Be a limited release.
I don't know. I'm still kind of fat. I've lost some weight, but there's a lot.
I find the Weekend at Bernie sort of scenario a lot more amusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a? Like Bermuda style shirt, you know, what are those called?
Hawaiian shirt.
What Bermuda shirt?
Bermuda style shirt.
Because that's.
We could toss him in the Bermuda Triangle.
We could.
Yeah.
After he's
already been in.
We're going to put Jimmy Buffett through headphones.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I think the answer is we're going to prop you up behind a keyboard.
Yes. And eventually drop you into the Bermuda Triangle years down the road.
Yeah,
down the road. Yeah.
After you've had a long life as a dead person.
Yes. Yeah, but then I won't be there for the Silence Reunion Tour.
Well, what if the Silence Reunion Tour is in the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah, we're going to get
and we're all wearing
too.
Our Bermuda shirts.
Hey, we all got to sell out sooner
or
later.
Well, when we throw you in the Bermuda Triangle, it's going to be we'll come up with some really tragic story about, you know, you dying in like some sort of plane accident, and then that'll boost the record sales for that upcoming album.
For that sixth record,
yeah,
on Atlantic.
Yeah, and then of course you know when it comes time to tour, we'll have a hologram of you. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
doing nothing.
Yeah. Because doing nothing.
You're dead the whole time you were in the band.
Yeah.
And years later, it'll come out and be like, dude was actually dead. A lot of people don't know this, but he was dead.
It would be the behind the music.
That's how goth we were. We had a dead person in the band.
Yeah.
I felt we really hit rock bottom when we had a dead person in the band. And we pretended like he was still alive. That was really unethical.
Yeah. I will say not to totally throw a ratchet in the works here, but you know, you think of also touring in the Econoline van, you know, the smell.
We have a little turbo top.
Yeah. So you thought of that.
Yeah.
Well, we take veggie oil van, so it already smells bad.
Our van, we drive veggie oil and it smells like French fries.
Yeah, you just smell like you're
in the
kitchen of a fast food restaurant.
In the veggie oil tank.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We can have French fries.
when we're driving, it makes you hungry for French fries.
Wow. Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
Then we'll consume you.
The van has to stay vegan.
Oh.
It has to stay vegan.
It does, for real. It's only oil from Spax Veggie Fryer.
That's amazing.
So,
that's all it's going to be.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
It's not our van, unfortunately. We just rent it, but
still awesome.
Fossil free fuels.
Nice. Well, I think that's about it. Okay, I'll have links on the website and all of that. But if people want to find out more about all things silent, what do they do? Where do they go? What's going to happen?
We've got a Facebook page. Just look up Silence PGH. We have a Bandcamp page.
Silence PGH.
Silence PGH. I guess we're on Instagram now.
Yeah, I just made an Instagram account.
An Instagram.
Silence PGH.
Silence PGH. The record comes out April 15th or 16th.
I'll throw a link to the Profane Existence page, too, for cool. when that's there.
Yeah, it's profaneexistence.com, I believe, is that.
Yep.
If you're...
We'll have a release show one of those days.
One of those two days.
The 15th or the 16th, yeah.
Which I'll find out about on FaceTube or whatever.
Yeah.
Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at GonnaDiePodcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thanks to Brett, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.
Bye.
Peace. See you.
Bye.
Well, actually, I think we should, even though, again, I have a gain to adjust, I get some things over here, and I will put compression on, so it will kind of even everybody out. But if everybody could just say words real quick.
Words.
German.
Words.
Yeah. Good.
Dawn and quarterly.
Einsberg.
Dices das,
bro.
Ich bin ein Kugelschreiber.
Ein, zwei, drei, vier.
That's my favorite sentence in German. It means I'm a ballpoint pen. But I also just love the German word for ballpoint pen, which is bullet writer. It sounds so militant.
Bullet writer.
Yeah. Bullet writer.
You know something that like no one ever talks about is Nirvana was in Berlin the day the wall fell.
Who cares? The wall fell.
But
they knocked it down to power their amps. There's what actually little
the Berlin happened. Wall isn't there anymore?
My favorite word in German, though, is the word for female drummer, which is Schlagzeugspielerin, and that literally translates to hit thing player, female.
Nice.
Say it one more time.
Very
Schlagzeugspielerin.
Kind of sounds like you're singing. It's
hit,
like
hit thing player.
Schlagzeug
is the best word in German because it just means thing, and you can attach it to any other word and make a new word.
So
their word for airplane is Flugzeug, which is fly thing.
Fly thing. So I can say nice. I can say in German now. Zeug, right?
Zeug, yeah. Z-E-U-G.
Eins Zeug. One thing.
Ein Zeug.
I only have ein Zeug to say.
What about Zoidberg?
Zwei Zeugen would be two things.
And the other thing, two things, zwei Zeugen.
Ich bin ein Schlagzeugspielerin.
That's what she said.
That is what she said, because only a woman can say that, honestly. Because
oh, really?
That's female drummer.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. That's what she said.
Uh-huh.
So I'm totally putting this at the end. I'm going
to
say
you actually don't need to do that, actually.